Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to this week's episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your inner conclave of nerdom. My name is Diz, and I'm your pop culture and sports nerd. Ellie?
I am Ollie, your classic nerd.
And I'm V, I'm comic nerd.
So, interesting news out of Washington today. The House,
Donald Trump's penis is uncircumcised.
No, I don't know anything about his penis and don't want to. Though Stormy Daniels, or whatever her name is.
Yeah, she knows.
Is threatening to return the money
to his lawyer, not to him.
No, to him.
I don't know, but because the lawyer gave him the money.
Yeah, I know. The lawyer gave him or gave her the money, but she's threatening to return it back to Donald Trump, basically saying that it was Donald Trump that paid her, not the lawyer. And so that she could talk freely about the encounter. He's suing to ensure that her interview with 60 Minutes never sees the light of day. At this point, he goes, what's the point? Everyone already knows what it's about.
Yeah.
Everyone already knows the details. You just suing her or stomping her proves that whatever she has to say is true.
That's true, because it's worth his time to do that.
Yeah. So it's the same thing with the book, the Fire and Fury book, right?
Uh-huh.
He tried to sue to keep the Fire and Fury book off the shelves. It only made it a bestseller. Right?
Yeah.
Don't. It's a really stupid tactic.
What is it called again? Isn't it like Bette Midler or something? Or what is? There's an actual effect to that where it's like by actually bringing exposure to it, you're making What is it? I don't remember what it's called,
but it is something.
The Bette Midler effect?
No, it's like one of those old white ladies. I don't know.
Like when you draw attention to it, it only makes it more real.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening. Stormy Daniels is actually threatening. But that's not the real news. The real news is the House Intelligence Committee today announced that it was closing its investigation into Trump-Russia and that it had found no evidence of collusion. Instead, they found evidence of inappropriate meetings and grave mistakes, but no deliberate attempts at collusion. Now, this is considered a huge deal. One, because most people, most outside observers, believe that they haven't actually done a thorough investigation. No. They have not compelled testimony from a variety of different people. Corey Lewandowski, Hope Hicks, and Steve Bannon all refused to give testimony. Uh-huh. They came to the committee, but they didn't actually present any information. They didn't quite plead the fifth. They didn't plead executive privilege. They just chose not to answer. At that point, the committee is supposed to subpoena them and force them to answer,
right? Oh.
Under the threat of legal coercion. But they didn't. They also refused to subpoena the Deutschland Bank records. They refused to subpoena
Deutsche Bank, you mean?
And refused to subpoena Trump's tax records. So there's a lot of avenues that have remained kind of open. They didn't look into George Nader. And so the Democrats are really pissed because they don't have any control over the House Intelligence Committee. Mm-hmm. And it looks like yet again Devin Nunes, who was supposed to have been recused, is playing interference for the White House by all kind of outside measures. Now, the biggest controversy about that is that they are actually going to contradict the Intelligence Committee or the Intelligence Community. The Intelligence Community, that is, are spies, right? The CIA, etc., DNI.
Yeah.
All have concluded, that's 19 total agencies have concluded, based off of separate information, that there was Russia meddling that favored Trump.
Yeah, I mean, they are now obvious.
The committee, the congressional committee, is saying, no, there wasn't. Yes, there was Russia meddling, but it wasn't actually in favor of anyone.
How does that work?
Yeah, well, you know.
How much time did they spend on, like, the Benghazi and Hillary Clinton?
Oh, years.
Okay,
spent years.
So they've spent 1 year on...
Less than a year.
Oh, okay. So they spent less than a year on this.
Because the Russian meddling didn't really come out until after he was elected.
Yeah, it didn't fully go into around... I mean, it's been about a year almost.
Yeah, okay, so about a year on this, like multiple years on the Hillary Clinton stuff.
Yeah.
How much time did they fucking spend on Monica Lewinsky?
You know, the big problem here is that I think the collusion stuff is a bit of a smokescreen in general. My personal beliefs, right? I'm not saying that Russia didn't meddle, and I'm not saying that Russia didn't favor Trump. It certainly did. The evidence is there, right?
Yeah.
But I think this kind of fixation on collusion is just, it's one of those things like Democrats are hoping against hope that it rallies the base. And Republicans are hoping against hope that they can somehow shut it down and pretend it never happened, right? But at the end of the day, those aren't actually the big crimes. The big crimes have always been financial in nature, right?
Yeah.
They've always been money laundering.
But the thing is this, though, right?
Obstruction of justice. Those are much bigger and more interesting in my mind.
That is true.
Than this fixation on Russia. Yeah. Because Russia, this Russia collusion thing is a convenient out for America. On one hand, if you're on the left, you can go, oh, well, it's all Russia. No, I'm sorry. You have to deal with the fact that there is a significant number of your fellow countrymen that are racist bigots.
Yeah, the left. The left is just as guilty for a lot of the things that.
I wouldn't say just as guilty, but I think that their fixation on Russia is misplaced. It's kind of a weird Hail Mary
for them. I feel like for them, it's a lot of like they're trying to find that like aha moment in Russian collusion. When it's simply, it's like, it's not a movie, so it's not going to be that, like, moment where everything fits together all of a sudden because they found the one piece.
Second, I mean, like, we had incidents of politicians meddling with foreign governments before election, before Nixon, quite famously told Cambodia and Vietnam not to do any type of peace accords until he got elected so that he could be, so it could favor him. The Iran-Contra affair under Reagan, where he literally sold illegal weapons to Iran he could fund the Contras in Nicaragua. I mean that's a collusion. I don't know what is, right? But the point is, and what happened after that, right?
Like, dare you talk
a handful of A's Reagan. Got in trouble, but Reagan, nothing ever happened to Reagan, right? So I think the Trump-Russia thing, I'm not as big outraged by this, but it is one of those moments where you go, the Intelligence Committee, which is supposed to be nonpartisan, is obviously partisan at this point in time. You have intelligence on one hand that is Republican-oriented, right? Republicans can look at this and go, oh, you see? Vindicated, no collusion. Even though, they had to use some real legal language. Inappropriate meetings, right? Yeah. Well, what are inappropriate meetings with Russia?
It's technically, like, being peed on by a Russian prostitute is an inappropriate meeting.
Like, or
I'm just saying.
Or the Democrats have their own lens of information. They're both looking at like the same data set,
yeah,
and they're seeing completely different things. And this is a serious problem. But it means that the House Intelligence Committee is pointless. Now, what does it mean for broader America, right? On one hand, it means we always knew what we knew, and that is that Congress is worthless.
Oh, yeah.
Completely one of the most defective forms of branches of our government is Congress, right? Second, it means that nothing is going to change in the Mueller investigation, right? Mueller is completely independent. He's a special prosecutor. So that's still ongoing.
Wait, so who hires Mueller?
The FBI? Mueller is through the Department of Justice.
Oh.
Yeah, the Department of Special Counsels, it's called. He completely runs his own thing, right? In fact, the Special Counsel's office also handles others, like government oversight. They actually just noted or whatever you want to say, they Kellyanne Conway violated the Hatch Act, right, where she used her platform to support one political candidate or another. She's an advisor, right? Like, her job, she cannot go on TV and say, vote for so-and-so, buy so-and-so.
Uh-huh.
That's unduly affecting elections. She did. She did on Fox News, and opened up a complaint against her, and the complaint was successfully went through, and the special prosecutor said, yes, she did violate the Hatch Act. Now it's up to the White House to actually do anything about it, which they won't.
Yeah.
But that's the difference, right? Is the special prosecutor and the Department of Justice is technically autonomous. It does its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Congress, the congressional committees are still run by congressmen who are interested in things like getting reelected and playing to their bases, right? So even Democrats, like the Democrats who are really talking about this Russia stuff, they do so fundamentally because it riles up their base.
That's true, yeah.
Just like the Republicans who are like, we need to shut this down, are doing so because they're afraid it'll piss off some of their Trump base.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a meme like the other day.
You saw a meme. This is a great way to...
Yeah. It was, but it's relevant, right? It said, had Obama had multiple baby mothers...
Yeah, we've mentioned this.
Married an immigrant, had sex with
the
porn star.
Paid her hush money.
Yeah, paid her hush money. And then go and just start cussing out our allies. The Republicans would have turned the world apart.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I mean, they turned the world apart when he didn't do any of that stuff.
He did half of the stuff that Trump did, he would have already been impeached. Now, I've actually pointed out that everything that people hate about Hillary Clinton, Trump has done tenfold, right? Like, all the stuff that people point out about Hillary Clinton, the fact that she is supposedly corrupt in the sense that she believes she's above the law, Trump, right?
Yeah.
The fact that she supposedly may have had, she lined her pockets, right? Pay for play, Trump, yeah. Right? The fact that she compromised our intelligence, Trump, right? I mean, yeah. she may have used a private server. Trump literally told our intelligence to Russia, right? Yeah. Oh, did you know this, and then our ally who had given us the information, which happened to be Israel's Mossad, was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Did you just give out the information we privately told you? This was confidential. This was classified, and you just handed it out willy-nilly to the Russian ambassador. So he's done all those sorts of things. But what I find particularly fascinating in all this is that the mental calculations of Republicans. Like, I get that you really want to put this behind you, especially since the head of the committee, Devin Nunes, was literally on Trump's transition team, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just that he should have recused himself. Like, he shouldn't be involved in any way, shape, or form. He's on the fucking transition committee. Team, right? You can't be on both. You can't be Team Trump and Team I'm Impartial. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's true.
But the mental calculations of them going, okay, we'll close this investigation and hope nothing further comes out in the next few years. Every information that comes out over the next few weeks, few months, few years about collusion, every new indictment and charge by the Mueller investigation, every new leak is going to make Republicans look bad.
That is true, because they're the ones that closed the House Intelligence
Committee. Yeah. Like, I understand that they made the decision to jump on the Trump train, and they're all for it now, right? They've excused everything he's done so far. But in my mind, I'm going, if I'm a self-serving congressman, right, this is a stupid decision from just a political calculation. Forget serving your country, forget morals, forget ethics, forget all the other stuff.
They forgot about that years ago.
Yeah, so. they've always been shitty.
Yeah.
But from a purely political calculation, this is such a dumb move. Every fucking scoop that comes out over the next... And you can bet that over the next few weeks, there's going to be a lot of them, right?
Yeah.
Democrats are going to leak. The FBI is going to leak. Everyone's pissed, right? The intelligence community is going to be pissed because you're contradicting them.
Yeah.
So all of that stuff that comes out is literally going to be like, well, why didn't you investigate this? Why did you close so early? There's no escaping this. There's no, like, 6 months from now, we can go... Okay, there was collusion. Cool. We're going to go, okay, there was collusion. Why didn't you find it?
Well,
why didn't you investigate it? I think they're hoping that people forget there was an investigation.
So they're trying to parrot the thing, or they're trying to put the blanket over it, and the bird thinks it's night, and it goes to sleep.
Maybe if I don't look at it, it'll go away type thing.
But you know, it's like, worked for them before, though, to be fair.
I don't know, though, except there was an ongoing investigation. It's not like that they were the only people investigating Trump, and now other people are going to have to do it independently.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like they were investigating Trump, but there are also this other fucking special counsel going on. It's going to be...
Who has just as much, at the end of the day, also has just as much credibility.
Well, he has more credibility because, yeah. One, he's appointed... He's not playing part of politics, right? They're lawyers.
Yeah.
They're lawyers and FBI agents. They're not politicians. More importantly, they've been appointed by Republicans to investigate a Republican. There's no... You can try to accuse them of... You've noticed, like, no one's attacking Mueller anymore. Remember, like, in December and January, that was the thing?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was attacking Mueller because they wanted to discredit it. It failed so miserably that no one even brings up that point anymore. No one talks about Mueller being corrupt. They just... Because that
line, they still do. You're on Twitter. You've seen it.
Yeah, but very small. Not in the same way that they used to. You have small pockets of it. The reality is that line of attack didn't work, so they're using other lines of attack. So he has way more credibility. And he's also the only one that can bring indictments. The congressional committee can't. They can recommend stuff. So this is one of those moments where you just go, this is just from a purely political point. Whoever their advisors are, this was a dumb move. I mean, you're gonna, if I was a Democrat, I would hang this around Devin Nunes' neck for the next few months until his re-election happens or he falls in November. Like, put up those posters, put up those flyers, have those every single day for the next few months. Just hang it on their necks. And they're all vulnerable.
Nunes is a California boy, isn't he?
He's a California. He's up in Fresno, Monterey, Bakers. Like, that kind of is a weird, big... It's actually a relatively safe congressional district, even though there's more registered Democrats. They've gerrymandered it enough that it's relatively safe. But he's... I don't know. We'll see. What I find fascinating about this is that you have two different groups of people looking at the same information and coming to different conclusions. And that's what I really want to talk about today, right, is how the internet has created these silos. There was this great article published by the New York Times opinion pages, and it was by a person named Zeynep Tufekci. who does a lot of work on the kind of the digital world. And she looked at YouTube and she wrote, it seems as if you are never hardcore enough for YouTube's recommendation algorithm. It promotes, recommends, and disseminates videos in a manner that appears to constantly up the stakes. Given its billion or so users, YouTube may be one of the most powerful radicalizing instruments of the 21st century. Now, this was a really interesting article for me because it's something that I've talked about a lot. My specialty isn't in the tech digital world, but I have a minor specialty. So, like, I'm a historian of the Middle East, North Africa, gender and sexuality, colonialism, imperialism, religion, science, and then a little bit on science and technology.
Okay.
And the science and tech stuff come from the perspective of the Frankfurt School, right, which is looking at culture industry.
Carl Jung.
Not Carl Jung. No. But very... Not even close, actually. I was going to give you some credit, but then I'm like, no, I can't.
Friedrich Holtzmann.
Horkheimer and Adorno. Horkheimer and Adorno. Walter Benjamin as well. So I come from this idea of a culture industry. So I, in particular, have found digital technology to be really cool, but also disturbing in the way that it shapes society. And this article really, I think, encapsulates a lot of my fears when it comes to technology. I always joke that I'm a Luddite, and I have the little piece of paper over my webcam, all that type of stuff, and that the tech overlords are gonna, they're gonna take over, right? But the reality is that behind all that joking, there is a genuine apprehension
to technology
about the digital technological world, because it's had an effect. So one of the things that we don't really know is that the effects of technology until much later. So the advent of TV, right? We often talk about television as being this fantastic technology. One of the unintended consequences of television is the shift from what is known as auditory learning, because there's multiple types of learning. There's spatial learning, auditory learning, visual learning. A shift from what is known as auditory learning to what is called visual learning, meaning that most people pre-TV, the studies show us that most people likely were able to learn through auditory processes. That is, people listened and they learned. This is,
I think, a classroom where like a teacher's lecturing and you pick it up.
This is, I think, best represented in lecture form.
Okay.
Right? That a professor can stand up and talk or read from a paper and you take notes and you learn.
Okay.
That is the most common form of learning pre-television. Post-television, visual is the most common form of learning, meaning that the lecture is no longer an effective pedagogical tool. You can't just lecture, you have to have visual aids.
Or like PowerPoints.
PowerPoints, etc. But we don't think of it that way. We don't even think about how subtle but profound that change is in the way our brains are hardwired. And that's all just because of television.
Isn't there another one where you have to actually do it? Is that sensory?
Yeah, spatial. All of those are technically sensory. Auditory and visual are both sensory forms of learning. Oh. That is what senses mean.
Yes. Well, what's the other one where you
tactile.
Have to... Tactile.
Tactile. Tactile. Touch. Yeah. And then we found a more similar case recently with toddlers, right? Toddlers don't know physically the motor skill of turning a page is something that they don't know. Uh-huh. But they know how to swipe. And they've done this study in which they put books in front of toddlers. And toddlers don't know how to turn or open books. Instead, they swipe with their finger. So there's ways that technology influences us that we don't even think about. And one of this is through polarization, right? When we're talking about Trump Russia, you're looking at the same data set. You're looking at the same bit of information. But you're coming to two radically different conclusions. Collusion? Not collusion. How is that possible? And I think this article, in some regards, really talks about that, arguing that there's a sort of radicalization and polarization that the digital world has. She's talking specifically about YouTube. But I see that on Twitter, Facebook, and all other forms of media, right? In other words, technology doesn't have a passive effect. It has an active effect in shaping our political discourse, and specifically towards extremism and radicalization.
I mean, we saw a lot of that in the 2016 elections even, right? Yeah. Where how articles that were like proven to be false because of their headlines and because of what it was saying were getting more traction than articles that were actually like proven right. So like if there was like a fake article about Hillary Clinton and something, right? Yeah. it was getting more shares, more views than like a CNN article that debunked it, which like I find interesting that people are seeing that there's two different things, right? They're seeing that this fit the mold that they wanted, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to keep continuing to read that and push that. Whereas when you see like something that's proving what like what you liked is not actually true,
yeah,
you wouldn't share it and you wouldn't click on it.
Yeah.
So
one of the books that I've constantly mentioned that really kind of talks to that is Infoglut by Mark Andronjevic. Now, he comes from the angle of, oh, it's because there's too much information.
Yeah.
Right? That people are able to pick and choose their information. But Tefeki's argument is more than just that there's too much information that you create. She's going that it's actually embedded and encoded in the structures and platforms you're talking
about. Well, I mean, just...
And that they takes the edges and makes that brings them to the center.
Well, I mean, have you... Like look, we've all been on YouTube, right? I'll see a video of... I'll see, like, a headline, like, hot girl takes off shirt, right? Mm. I'm like, ooh, click that, right?
Yeah, that's clickbait, right? Right?
Yeah, and that's how these YouTubers get big. Like, how did FousseyTube get big? Epic prank gone wrong, right? And it's like a picture of him getting punched in the face.
And that's the original fake news,
right?
Right. It was all the fucking...
Well, the thumbnails, too.
Yeah. Thumbnails and the pranks on YouTube.
Yeah, or even when you think about it, I mean, the clickbait articles, you don't even have to click on them. Technically, the title gives you just enough to kind of enforce whatever your views are originally, right? Mm-hmm. So if it has the words Benghazi, Hillary Clinton... Right, and it technically doesn't really say. It says just enough for you to kind of inform your views.
Uh-huh.
People won't even click on the article to read the damn thing. They'll take the title and they'll use it as ammunition for whatever their views are. Or just
read the title. That's absolutely.
Yeah, there was some moron on my Facebook that we went to high school with, who was upset during the Obama administration because he was going crazy over this article that said that President Obama was going to try to run for a third term. Right, so I clicked on the link and I read it, and it had a quote from Fappy the masturbating dolphin. So it was a completely fake. It was a joke article.
Yeah,
but he had literally seen the title and he had put it on his Facebook to tell other people that Obama was running for a third term. I called him out on it, and he just deleted it and didn't say shit because he's a moron.
Well, I mean, that's the reality of. So there's a right now. If you look up, there's an Austin explosion.
Yeah,
right. That happened. Right. If you look up Austin explosion on YouTube, the first thing that pops up is Alex Jones' show, which talks about that without absolutely no evidence whatsoever, that the prime suspects in the package are Antifa. No evidence whatsoever. But it's the first thing that shows up on YouTube's algorithm.
Yeah.
When you look up Austin explosions.
Well, I was going to bring up like... this idea of the clickbait and fake news, because College Humor did something like to just to show how people fall into it, not just the right, but the left also falls into it. So they posted this article that said Bernie Sanders can still actually become president, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people were like sharing it like, oh, please, please let this be true. Please let this be true. There, once you clicked on it, it was just them saying how like no matter what, like this is fake, and people are going to share this without actually reading the substance in
clever.
It.
Yeah.
You know, like this is just going to prove how like people are faking it. And they also did the same thing with like Hillary Clinton caught colluding with Russia. Here's the proof, and people were sharing that. And then and the same thing in the article is like there's absolutely no proof. We're just posting this as a headline to see how many times it gets shared.
You know, that is true. I mean, from personal experience, I saw articles like that a lot. More specifically, there was one that said Finland is a real country.
God, oh my God damn it.
And, you know, people keep
fuck, man.
Disseminating this false information about this false country existing in Northern Europe.
One of the fascinating things about the algorithm, though, what we should mention, is that it works in the sense that it always leans a little bit to the right.
How so?
In that if you click on a political, any type of political video, it eventually leads you down to George Soros is funding everything. It leads you down those particular ways. And that's why you have people like V who believe that Finland.
Well, I feel like...
Because they end up on those videos. They look up fishing. Yeah. And somehow that leads them to Finland.
It leads to the right because people in the false country of Finland, they fish with their right hand and they lead it leftwards towards Japan, where they have untaxed fishing trade going on.
I feel like Japan is to the right of Finland.
No, it's a spherical world, Diz. Isn't it? Maybe not.
I thought the world was flat.
Listen, no, it's spherical, but it's hollow.
Having a smart conversation with dumb people is a unique experience. No,
but here's my theory about why everything always lands to something on the right on YouTube.
Because the world is round.
God damn it, V. No, stop derailing me here. I'm in thought. It's because this is where these fuckers get their information from, right? It's some random fuck on YouTube who goes and says George Soros funds everything. Yeah. So that video has like 700,000 hits, right? And then when you're clicking on something, it'll pop up on your suggested because it has the same tags as like the CNN video, right? So it'll be like news, politics, Trump, right? And it's using the same tags, but now this one's got 700,000 hits because fucking fuckface who doesn't believe in the mainstream media is out there listening.
Yeah, but that what happens, it's not just that it leads you there. It takes those ideas that are on the fringe and it makes them mainstream. So it's this isn't like a, oh, people end up in weird places on the internet. That's true of everything. We all end up on the cat videos, right? It's so that it eventually, the stuff that's on the weird spaces become mainstream.
Yeah, it's not so much that you end up at the weird spaces. The weird spaces end up coming to you.
Yeah.
Ah. Well, see, I still blame it on the fuckers that take that.
Well, see, now, I mean, what's messed up about this is that, I mean, you guys remember the Gamergate controversy, 2014, right? It was very much...
The chick who banged the five guys?
Nope. What? No.
Was it? That's the one, burgers and fries, right? She hooked up with like five dudes.
Oh, jeez.
Wasn't that Gamergate?
Hey, listen, I don't know, right? The thing is, so, I mean, you guys already know the Gamergate controversy, the whole thing, right? But the problem is, though, what it did was it put into effect a lot of mainstream ideas that are now, like, an essential part of being on the right, especially on the online gaming community. One of them being, you know, that feminism is somehow destroying the gaming community, right? And literally, it all started with perceived collusion between... between Zoe Quinn and a video game journalist at Kotaku, right?
See, I was right.
That's not how it was. It actually ended up that most of the accusations were false.
Okay,
right. The point is not whether there was shoddy journalism, right? Is that the weird extremist views of Gamergate, which is anti-feminism, moved somewhere and it moved into the center.
So think about it like this. Okay, now we're seeing this a lot now. Mm-hmm. Where the term culture war is being thrown around by the right a lot, yes, right?
Yes, Alex Jones yells he's in a culture war. So
the thing is, that idea was kind of the seed. It was a seed in Gamergate. The idea that progressivism was taking over gaming culture or our culture in general, and that these people were trying to basically fight that.
Okay.
Now, the way that they fought it was in the most idiotic way possible, and quite frankly, you know, just horrendously dangerous by doing things like doxing, right? Which is part of our mainstream thought now. The idea of doxing is something that almost everyone understands, right? Swatting people has become a part of streaming. Uh-huh. You know, a guy just died from swatting not a couple months ago.
Well, and it's not just that those tactics have become mainstream, right? It's that two things have become mainstream. On one hand, the figures themselves have become mainstream, right? So Mike Cernovich and those people, and Milo came out of the Gamergate world.
Uh-huh.
Milo was invited to CPAC.
Yes.
Right. Now, they revoked it. But he's spoken at conservative. Milo was a fringe anti-Gamergate person originally, then absorbed the Gamergate culture because it was popular, sensationalist, etc., and then became a mainstream conservative thinker enough to the point that CPAC took him seriously. Mike Cernovich was a dude who wrote basically rape fantasies and rape apologies, and then suddenly became quote-unquote a journalist because he periscopes from his mom's basement, from his mother-in-law's basement. Right
here in Orange County, too.
Here in Orange County. So, like, those people are no longer on the fringe. They've come to the center. Lauren Southern is speaking at the universities. Milo is being invited onto university campus. There, it's not like, it's like these people were like the Holocaust deniers who have now become, are being taken seriously by the academic community, right? Now, that hasn't happened, luckily, in Holocaust studies, but it has happened in politics. These are people who in the academic world would never be taken seriously, but somehow now in the political world are being taken seriously. Their voices matter to some. I mean, we literally, they're doing videos, not just videos, but doing New York Times articles on Mike Cernovich and Lauren Southern and Milo and all these other people. Why? Because they've moved from the fringe. They're not spokespersons of the fringe. They've moved somewhere into the middle. They've become representative of a larger group than the fringe. The second component of that is the language of Gamergate, right? The language of Gamergate isn't just a culture war. It's specifically PC culture. Mm-hmm. Now, suddenly, everyone's talking about PC culture.
So, yeah, I mean, PC culture, it's always been a thing, I think. Because, you know, when we were in our 20s, people would talk about it, but it hasn't become... It wasn't a hot button issue the way it is now. I mean, I'm on campus, you know, a couple times a week, and there's actually a club on there. It's literally called "I'm Pro Free Speech, Not PC Language." Mm-hmm. There's literally a club on campus that's about that, right? This idea that somehow you're allowed to say whatever you want without anyone criticizing you for it. People were upset. The people who are pro Gamergate, you know, a lot of their language ended up being about the fact that they were being called out for anti-feminist or, you know, like very misogynistic language in games, which is absolutely true. I grew up playing games. We all did at one point or another, right? And we understand that it was very misogynistic. Still is very misogynistic.
Also racist as hell, too. Yeah.
But when people come, when gaming became more mainstream and it became more inclusive, a lot of people began criticizing that culture because, let's face it, the use of the term of rape and everything else in games, especially online games, is rampant and it's bad, right? And it just goes pretty much unregulated because you really can't. There's really no real regulation outside of type, right? I always find
that the PC arguments one of the dumbest arguments I've ever seen. No, I mean, the idea that PC culture is stifling free speech is literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard. All of those topics are all being talked about on the Academy. No one's ever stopped those topics
from happening. Exactly.
Saying trigger warning, content warning, none of those things actually stifle those conversations. Those conversations are still happening, but they're now being bracketed. What the people who are talking about PC culture, and this is where Gamergate is so interesting, right, is Gamergate's is pissed off that they're being called out for that shit.
Yeah.
Right? Then they find allies who aren't gamers, the Milos, et cetera, of the world, who go, well, I want to say the N-word. I want to say call people by queer expletives and pejoratives. I want to be able to say those things. I agree with Gamergate. PC culture run rampant.
Yeah.
They start off there, and then you end up with fucking the New York Times running article after article after article. The New York Times is literally hired. The opinion pages of the New York Times is the worst fucking trash bin fire I've ever seen in modern journalism, right?
Uh-huh.
If anyone's listening to me, unsubscribe to the New York Times. Stop reading them. Go to Washington Post. Their last semblance of journalism, sorta. Even they're kind of iffy.
Quote a New York Times article?
And I did. I hate the New York Times infinitely because of the hires of people like Brett Stevens, David Brooks, and Barry Weiss, whose literal jobs are just to write opinion page after opinion page about that exact thing you're talking about. PC culture run rampant, specifically illiberal liberals who are now shutting down free speech and opposing points of view. Now, the irony is they're parroting what? The Gamergate people.
Yeah.
But they're now making it mainstream. They're not talking about Gamergate. They're not citing Milo, but they're using the exact same language.
That is true. I mean, you look at what they're able to weaponize. We talk about this. They're able to weaponize terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
When someone come in to defend people in Gamergate, like Zoe Quinn or Anita Sarkeesian or something, right? Yeah. They would literally use the same thing. White knighting.
Yeah.
SJWs, right? They would take language and they turned it against it as if somehow the people who were trying to defend these women had something that they were also ultimately trying to get.
Yeah.
Another part of that whole thing is someone can come in and defend a woman for whatever reason online. I can guarantee you that more times than not, you're going to get someone be like, you know, just because you're going to defend them doesn't mean they're going to sleep with you.
Yep. Right? All the damn time.
That is kind of the cut and paste response to anything, any type of defense to any woman for any reason, you know, in any online community. Now, imagine just how horrible that is in terms of when you're a woman, you're going, this is no, there's no respite for you, because even the people that are defending you, they're undermining the intention of the people who just want to defend you for
and that's true. That's certainly true. But I want to focus specifically on how those ideas and cultures and thoughts become mainstream. How does that move to the mainstream? And it's not just that they've become popular. It's the fact that there's something in the coding itself, right? This isn't an accidental thing. It's not that they became popular because they were, I don't know, you know, well-liked or that people are like, oh yeah, I agree with this. It's because there's something within the platform that promotes that type of thinking. So when we think, for example, YouTube, sooner or later, you look into any of these sort of debates, you look up anything political, you look up anything about feminism, you're not going to be led down to UC Berkeley's Judith Butler's interview on feminism. You're going to be led to Sargon of Akkad's rants against Anita Sarkeesian.
That is true, right? Yeah.
The algorithm favors sensationalism because the algorithm is not neutral. This is one of the kind of myths that we have about the tech world, is that technology will somehow liberate us. And it's true. The internet has made knowledge more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
But simultaneously, because that technology is produced within the framework of capitalism, selling ad revenue, right? Clicks become the primary social capital of the platform.
Your Marxist is showing again.
Of course I'm being a Marxist here, right? Social capital is important. You got to get those clicks. And if you get those clicks, you get the ad revenue. In that case, anything that is sensationalist and controversial will naturally be pushed up to the top versus something that is nuanced, right? We talk about this when we talk about the Samowar Network, right? Which is something that we, Diz and I, are both a part of. And one of the kind of conversations about the Samowar Network constantly is, one, yeah, how do we improve these conversations? But how do we get more people to listen?
Yeah.
And more often than not, those discussions end up going where? We need to have more controversy. We need to disagree more. That is us literally being shaped by the technology of clicks. Uh-huh. How many times have we gone back, oh, so-and-so, this video had this many clicks, this video had this many views, rather than going, this video discussed this.
Uh-huh.
This video had an opportunity for us to do this. No. We look at it in view terms, right?
Yeah.
Those are important conversations that are being shaped by the medium of the technology. The algorithm is not neutral. The algorithm favors not balance, not neutrality, not information, but being able to sell you. That's the key. Being able to, and in that world, it's always going to favor the sensationalists. I mean, the Sargon of the Gods of the world, the Sam Harris of the world, these people only exist because these platforms allow these kind of crazy thinking to become mainstream or seem reasonable because the algorithm favors them. Now, there was a canary in the coal mine. There was something that gave us a heads up and go, hold on a minute, there's a problem, and that's porn.
What about now?
Porn was the canary in the coal mine. So there is
what the fuck's a canary in a coal mine? What does that mean?
In a coal mine, in the olden days when people worked in coal mines,
uh-huh.
they would bring a canary with them, a little bird,
uh-huh.
that would warn them if the canary died, that means there was no oxygen. So the canary in the coal mine is an early warning system, right?
PETA probably hated this.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, this was before PETA existed, right? But it's an old technique, right? Yeah.
I thought it was a sex position.
So today, when we say canary in a coal mine, that's what we're talking about. It's okay. Like early warning, right?
Okay.
And porn was an example. There's a lot of really interesting research that is being done by scholars of porn and eroticism.
How does one become a scholar of porn?
Yeah, me and Diz do a lot of research on porn.
None of you are scholars of
it,
right?
I would dare.
Watching is not considered.
I have done more research on pornography than any pornography scholar has ever done.
That's not how this works. Anyways. So porn scholars have argued, for example, and the industry itself has actually been quite open about it. If you look at 20 years ago's porn,
uh-huh.
which is predominantly print porn.
That's true, right? Like magazines, right? Yeah.
What was considered pornography then
uh-huh.
is by today's standards softcore.
Yeah, it's just there was no bush.
So hardcore.
Just tits.
Okay, listen.
Jesus Christ.
In other words, you see, hardcore on the other
softcore,
end.
Softcore, bro.
Hardcore was considered marginal, meaning it existed.
Yes.
But existed on the side.
Gonzo, right? Films.
It was difficult to get a hold of them. With the advent of the technology in which clicks are the primary way to compete, right? If you're one porn site versus the other, you want to get more clicks than the other one.
You gotta show insertion.
You need to become more and more sensational. So what happens is the edges, mm-hmm. that is the hardcore, becomes mainstream. To the point where now the mainstream pornographic world, now mind you, my information of the pornographic world is a little bit like a decade old. But the mainstream of it is considered what would be considered hardcore back in the day.
That is true. Or even
too extreme.
Or even, yeah, I mean, really, an extreme, I mean, you look at it now, like, we actually mentioned this a couple times, like, incest porn became a big thing for whatever reason. Well, right?
It's about shocking.
Yeah.
Like, more and more shock, more and more sensationalism, more and more violence even, which brings it all to the middle, right?
Yeah.
So the mainstream, when you, like, the ordinary porn that you watch when you're having a fap session.
Yeah.
Right? Whatever, right? Diz has come back from a hard day of work, settles down, turns on his, lights his candles, put on the Marvin Gaye, and
kinda
settles in.
Kind of sucker you think I am, bro?
Settles in.
Oh, no, put no
what
candles.
He's watching, what he's
pants
watching.
Off, dance off.
What he's watching is a product of market forces. And those market forces has, in a sort of spiraling effect, become more and more extreme. Now, interestingly, we find the same thing with people's porn habits.
Yeah.
Is that they start off somewhere and then they become more extreme in what they watch. Because they become desensitized.
Yeah.
And so they need to watch something that titillates them.
Is that why I'm watching midget porn? Right?
By the time you start off.
No, you want watching, people that are the same height as you. That's my point.
You're watching regular old coitus happening.
Uh-huh.
And before you realize it, a week down the line, you're watching donkey sex.
I've never watched bestiality.
But what I'm saying is that you're moving in kind of extreme ways.
It's taking it too far.
Here's the thing about that. You go, okay, who cares? Porn has become more graphic. TV's become more graphic. Movies have become more graphic, right?
It's true.
In order to sell. But this has an effect on society.
How so?
Technology has an effect. So two Dutch researchers did a really interesting study in which they had women, they brought in these men, and they had them read two different papers. One paper would be the account of a woman's sexual assault. This is a survivor who would recount their sexual assault experience.
That's right. The other
paper would be a porn script. And their question was, could they discern the difference between what was fictional porn and what was real sexual assault? And guess what? They couldn't tell the difference. In other words, meaning that the script of sex, because we learn our sexual script from porn. Right. Uh-huh. Even if you don't watch porn, you learn it from a friend, you watch TV, etc. That this porn forms the kind of the unspoken language of sexual encounters, mm-hmm. right? You need to do this before this, you need to do that.
Yes.
Right? That whole language. In other words, violence being introduced into the mainstream now has an impact on society because it seems sexual norms as fundamentally what? Male-centered and violent. That is to say that male forcing themselves on women is represented in pornography as what? It's a good thing.
Yeah, or it's consensual, right?
She enjoys it.
Yeah.
Does that sound similar to some of the rape apologists?
Yes.
That is true, yeah, yeah.
She was asking for it. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? There is a societal effect here. Now, I'm not saying rape is a or sexual assault or any of that stuff, and we'll give a content warning in our description. Is it the result of porn?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying the extremism that we've seen, the radicalization in pornography, was the canary in the coal mine. That gave us the warning that, oh, something was going wrong. In other words, these kind of the digital world of YouTube, streaming, Twitter, Facebook, don't have neutral effect.
Yeah.
They are favoring, embedded in their actual coding, right? Yeah. That is, their DNA, in other words, is inclined towards sensationalism and clicks. And in that market, it will always lead to radicalization. If no matter where you start out, you're watching cat videos and before long you're watching Alex Jones. And if that's the case, if the algorithms are that, then we can't expect YouTube, Twitter, etc. to become our saviors. We need to really dismantle or reconsider how these technologies are used, push back and force the algorithms to change so that if I'm looking up politics, I go to actual political pundits, I go to MSNBC, CNN, etc., that I don't end up with Alex Jones.
No.
That's not saying silence the Alex Jones, erase them, but put them back where they belong. The algorithm has put them in the center. Push them back into the shadows.
So you're essentially, what you're saying is that these spaces aren't actually neutral, even despite the fact that people think that they are.
They're not.
Right? Because technically, the idea behind YouTube is supposed to be egalitarian with what it shows. Mm-hmm. But in order for it to market things properly, it'll naturally push those extremes to the front, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's essentially what the thesis is right there.
Okay. Clickbait, motherfuckers.
In other words, what I am arguing is that in the same way that these conversations have nuance,
uh-huh.
right? Conversations about politics have nuance.
That's true. It's complicated.
Conversations about
yeah.
feminism, nuance. Their nuance exists here. Uh-huh. You need to introduce nuance to the algorithms. If the algorithm only recognizes one thing, and that is clicks and sensationalism, it will become a tool of radicalization. We've seen the effects of this. I mean, 20 years from now, they're going to be talking about in the same way that we talk about ISIS radicalization via the internet. Why does ISIS use the internet? Because it recognizes it as a radicalization tool. Uh-huh. We'll be talking about 20 years from now how this tool was used to radicalize the white men on the right. I mean, last year alone was a spike in hate crimes and violence by white supremacists.
Yep.
That is linked to the type of access they have here in Orange County. Just down the street from us in Lake Forest, a young kid was killed by a member of Atamufen, which is a hate group, right?
Mm-hmm.
That member was radicalized online. He found his community on Disc or whatever it's called, the gaming chatting community. So this is something that we really need to think about. Anyways, I think we're going to have a shorter podcast because we all have busy things to do. Let us know what you think about this topic. Everyone who's listening to us is listening vis-a-vis one of these technologies. Do you see the unintended effects of these technologies? Is it even unintended?
We're turning people into Marxists.
Yeah, here's the question. Yeah. Have you had this experience? Have you clicked on something and it led somewhere else? We're like, why am I even watching this video? Why is Alex Jones being recommended to me on YouTube, right? Or whatnot. Let us know what your thoughts are and what you think the effect of technology on society is. Should we be worried, or am I just an old man? And Diz is going to let you know how you can get a hold of us.
Yes. If you want to tell V that Finland's a real country on Facebook, you could do so on facebook.com/currentlynerdy.
I'm not going to listen to it.
You could also tweet him @currentlynerdy. Tell him how Finland is real. We're on the Instagram. Comment on all of our pictures. #FinlandIsReal. And that's on the Instagram, Currently Nerdy. We're on the Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. Write a note about how Finland is real on there. We're on the YouTube, search Currently Nerdy on YouTube. Write comment on our videos saying that Finland is a real thing. And we're also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. If you want to help our algorithms and get us to become more popular, please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating, and then make your friends subscribe and give us a 5-star rating, and we'll read it out loud on the podcast. Your new ratings, we'll read them out loud. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can I get a hold of you?
Well, you have to comment in order for us to read it. Just don't rate the thing with stars.
Yeah. Oh yeah, rate and review.
Yeah. Anyway, you can find me on my websites at thesandwichslayer.com. That's my food blog. You can find me on my travel blog, where I go everywhere besides Finland because it doesn't exist, at 7crossroads.com. It's the number 7crossroads.com. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at vytran214. That's VYTRAN214. Elite.
You can catch me on Instagram and Twitter at AAOLOMI, or on my website at alialomi.com, or on our sister podcast, Head on History. Diz.
You can find me everywhere at Dizbulla, DIZBULLAH.
For everyone here currently nerdy, thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you, unless you're a piece of shit right-wing fuckface.